Five, four, three, two, one.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
Think we could listen to the radio or something?
Radio? Who needs the radio?
Featuring the biggest names and newsmakers from the world of sports media.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Now, here's your host, the president of Barrett Sports Media, Jason Barrett.
Welcome to season three of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. I am Jason Barrett. This is where you come for insights, opinions, and featured conversations with members of the sports media business. If you've listened before, then this next plea will sound familiar. If you're new to the party, please take a minute to pay attention. I ask one favor: subscribe on iTunes, leave us a review, and share the content on social media. We don't charge for the podcast. That allows us, though, to make a mark on the charts and expand the interest in what we do. I greatly appreciate your support. On the first episode of season three, I'm pleased to welcome to the show the Senior Vice President of ESPN Audio, Trog Keller. I recently made a trip to ESPN's campus in Bristol, Connecticut, to sit down with Trog, chat about a number of items that are relevant to our business. I think you guys are going to enjoy hearing what he has to say. Now, before I get into this week's show and some of the content we're going to do, I want to address one topic that gets asked of me pretty regularly via email, and that is, why does the podcast air for months and then disappear? And guys, it's quite simple. I look at podcasts very much like a TV series. When you do them for 52 straight weeks, they can become less important and in some cases not very good. That's an even bigger issue for those who are on the air 5 days a week and also trying to create original programs that make an impact. This also isn't the only thing that keeps me busy. I've got consulting work to do for stations. I write for the website. I do in-market training, and a lot of that involves travel. So those projects take precedence. When I produce a podcast episode, I try to put maximum effort into it. I don't believe in releasing episodes just for the sake of having something out each week. Some will do that because it spikes their traffic or it might even generate some extra advertising revenue. But that's not my model. Much like The Walking Dead, Designated Survivor, or any other effective sitcom, I like to give special attention to these projects for 12 to 15 weeks, and then take a break to clear my head, reset the show, tackle my normal work, and build anticipation for the next season. Hopefully that explains it, but if you've got any other questions you want to fire at me, by all means, reach out via email, jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. Now, if you listened at all to season two, you might remember that we would kick things off with what I called the 5 and 5. 5 stories in 5 minutes going around the world of sports media. And as much fun as that was, there were times when 5 stories honestly became a real stretch. I also did a poll to get your feedback to find out what you guys did and didn't like. And you guys acknowledged that there were times that feature was red hot and there were other times where it wasn't. And I appreciate that. So if you ever hear something on the podcast that you don't like or think isn't as top-notch as it should be, shoot it my way so I can work on getting it better. That being said, starting with this episode and going forward for season three, I'm introducing what I call the BSM 180. 3 minutes of my thoughts on anything from one particular topic to multiple stories. Sometimes that will be what's in the news. Other times it will be strategic issues that I want to address because I think it can help a brand become better. Today, in fact, I've got one specific item I want to expand on, and I'm going to do that right now. So without further ado, let's get into the BSM 180.
You have 3 minutes, and you better make it good.
In March, I ran a sports radio programming summit for program directors in Chicago. During a session on sports radio advertising, Laurel Klein of Wintrust Financial was asked about working with PDs, and her response left many in the room stunned. She said that the conference was her first chance to even meet a program director. It'd be easy to ask what the hell's going on in Chicago, why don't the PDs know a key client, but the reality is, this happens everywhere. And that begs the question, why? Are programmers really too busy to make time for clients who are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on their radio stations? Is a PD only interested in ratings, or are they managing the brand as if it were their own business? Now, we can lay blame at the PD's doorstep because, yes, they do contribute to the problem. However, there's another side that needs to be examined as well. How active are account executives in engaging the PD to help them? Are they afraid to ask the PD to come to a conference room or take a trip outside the office to help close a sale? Are they worried that a client will be turned off because the PD might reject their idea or suggest something else? And what about the general manager and sales manager in this process? Are they informing the program director of their monthly or quarterly sales performance? I've been in many places during my career, guys, and more times than not, the sales department information is very limited to a program director. In most cases, there's also no ability to share in the sales team's success. I signed 5 different programming contracts before becoming a consultant and strategist. Only once during that time did I earn a bonus if I helped the sales team meet or exceed a budget. Shouldn't that be included in every PD's contract? Can you imagine if the film industry didn't bring Steven Spielberg into the room to try and close a deal when he possesses the best ability to create additional opportunities in a film for paying clients? It makes no sense. There are brands like Barstool, Vice, Bleacher Report, SB Nation, BuzzFeed, and Whistle Sports all earning significant income from creating branded content. Most of these groups don't have a 24-hour radio or TV station behind them pushing their content and client messages. They rely on digital channels and social buzz. Radio has a tremendous advantage in this case, except it still operates under the same mindset that it has for decades. As a former PD who now owns and runs his own business, I see the world changing. PDs now have to be experts at hiring talent and creating content that excites an audience, but they also have to be skilled at helping a brand use that content and fan connection to generate revenue. If you think it's going to happen by airing 14 to 16 minutes of spots and selling a few promotions, good luck. There's never been a more important time for sales and programming to function as one. The second everyone starts exploring those conversations and rowing in the same direction, the better off the entire industry will be. So what did you guys think of the first installment of the BSM 180? Please pass along your feedback on Twitter at SportsRadioPD or by email jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. That now brings us to the first conversation of Season 3, and it takes place with ESPN Audio's Senior Vice President Trog Keller. I've known Trog for about 13 or 14 years, and he's one of the good guys in our business. We catch up on a regular basis at conferences and stay in touch by email. And Trog has a huge passion for the audio industry. And notice, I said audio, not radio. There is a difference between the two. Given Trog's position and the amount of attention that follows the worldwide leader in sports, I could have probably gone 2 hours asking him questions about the brand and its people. But he does have a company to run, so we knocked out a number of items during the course of a 25-minute chat, and I think you're going to enjoy it. 3, 2, 1. All right, so let's start with this. State of the ESPN Radio Network. How would you describe your feelings on where you are right now?
I feel tremendous. I think that we came through a year where there was a lot of change. And as you know, and as your listeners know, because they all toil in this great medium of ours, that change is tough in radio, right? It's a habitual medium. You know, people get up every morning. They're used to listening to the same people or, you know, whatever, wherever there is change, it sets you back a little bit and you start again, right? And so, obviously, the end of Mike and Mike was met with a lot of trepidation. What's going to happen?
Right.
You know you're going to take a step back when you start something new. It is better than I thought it was going to be, both from an advertiser revenue standpoint and from a listenership standpoint. We did not lose any affiliates. They get it. We're all in it together, and it's off to a really strong start. So that piece is good. I mean, the Levitard show has kind of blossomed. The streaming and the podcast, the downloads of that show is nothing short of stunning. Stephen A. Smith has hit the ground running. We've just added a bunch of affiliates there. And the new show that I think that we are all really excited about and hearing great buzz about is Will Cain's show in the afternoon. And then obviously we go into Jason Fitz and Sarah Spain. So it's as good of a lineup and as good as I've felt in a long time.
I mean, some of this in our business, for the longest time, you see these shows in place for 15, 20 years. They don't change.
Right.
You go back 2 years ago, your entire lineup was completely different. And we're just in a different world where it's hard to build 10-year shows.
Right.
That being said, how do you, from your chair, how do you measure whether or not a show is hitting the right buttons and is succeeding? Because as you know, in a national picture, it's not always based on one market and what your ratings are. There's a lot more to factor in.
Every show has to be true to the brand. To your point, the amount of change we've had over, you know, certainly over the years, but we keep moving forward, and that is testament to the power of the brand, mm-hmm. right? People have a certain expectation when they turn on ESPN radio that they're going to be informed, they're going to be entertained, that we're going to, you know, we're not going to take ourselves too seriously, but we're going to take what we do seriously,
right?
So,
right.
I mean, if we're consistent on all those things, then I'm satisfied. Mm-hmm. Like, then I know that we're holding up our end of the bargain. And again, I think that is one of the reasons we have been able to withstand the number of changes. You know, Tony Kornheiser, Dan Patrick, Mike Tirico, to present day. We're changing, but what we stand for our listeners doesn't change.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And I think you said something before, ratings and revenue and affiliates and listenership. I mean,
right. Well,
your affiliates aren't going and your money isn't, you kind of feel better about what you're doing, right?
Exactly. And I will tell you that that John Fitzgerald and his sales team have done an outstanding job kind of representing the brand to our advertisers. And we are helped, quite frankly, by the brand. I think everyone knows who's ever sold a spot in radio, how difficult it is to sell the invisible. One thing about the sales folks, when they come in and they represent what ESPN Radio is, people know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that helps us a great deal and helps our affiliates a great deal.
Playing off of that, you look at the network space today, you've got six, for the most part, national networks, not including Sirius, not including TuneIn, not including the individual channels like the Barstools, the VSiNs of the world. I mean, do you think the national picture is too crowded?
I don't pay that much attention to it. I pay attention to what we're doing and what we're putting out and how we're covering things and the sports that we have. So, you know, as long as I know that we've got Major League Baseball and the postseason and the NBA and the NBA Finals and the College Football Championship and the lineup that we have, you know, I feel there can be 20 more. But I think if we've got that kind of quality of content, both live, play-by-play, and our on-air talent, plus our collection of owned stations, I'm feeling good. And I think, look, imitation is the greatest form of flattery. I think people have seen what we've done and what we've established, and they're trying to make their mark. And quite frankly, you know, music, I think, in our medium is challenged.
Mm-hmm.
So stations are looking, you know, for talk. And so sports, you know, certainly fits a niche. So
you mentioned before Levitard's impact, especially in the digital space. One of the challenges that radio has as an industry is selling the digital space. You hear about, hey, this show's got all these downloads, how much money you make on digital. It's why they don't want to get rid of 16 to 20 minutes of spots per hour. So how do you feel? I mean, obviously, it helps when you have the grand machine behind you and you've got this full-scale effort to sell a show like Dan Le Batard. But how do you feel about radio's ability to sell digital and where you guys are now and where you're headed that way?
Hey, look, I can't give out specific numbers, but 3 years ago, it was a small number, and then it doubled, and then it doubled again. So it's, by the way, it's not replacing the traditional revenue stream, but it is growing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you look for growth. We've got a strategy of how to sell digital. It is paramount that everybody in the radio industry does that because, by the way, everybody's streaming on the phone. That's where your audience is going. And by the way, your stations are there, whether it's via TuneIn or you're streaming it, you know, straight through Nielsen. We're constantly talking to them. They've got to make it better. But we're in front of our advertisers and we're saying, look, you know, whether they're listening to the traditional radio or they're listening from, you know, Alexa in the home or Google Home or the smartphone in the car, in a smart car, you're selling ears. You better figure out how to sell the ears. Because if not, you're you're kind of missing where the whole thing is going.
You just look at the digital revenue projections over the next 5 years. You look at, like, Edison Research has put out information showing podcasting exploding over the last 5 years.
Yes, one
it's
in four.
Where the audience is. You're yep. right. But at the same time, telling traditional sellers who have sold radio a certain way to go into this new space when advertisers are still getting a feel for it is always a challenge.
Simple message, adapt or perish. You got to do both. Look, we're being no more disrupted than any other medium, right? I mean, the beauty, I think, of what we do and why I feel that radio is in a better place than print is that the proliferation of place where you can hit people between the ears, you know, the ears. There are more ways to get your content to listeners than ever before. And you know, I mentioned Alexa before. I mean, between Google Home and Alexa, there are more radios in homes now than there has been in the last decade, right? And I mean, I've seen studies that say, look, the two things that people ask the most are the weather and play my favorite radio station, right? And we're already seeing growth in that. So the listenership is going there. You've got to make sure your sales group is following.
The exposure to audio for sure is better than it's ever been before. I want to ask you about growth because there's one thing that I'm curious to pick your brain on is you look at there's a Supreme Court ruling coming up soon on the future of sports betting. And obviously, if that gets legalized, the explosion of revenue for the industry is pretty massive. On the other hand, the ESPN brand going into the sports betting space can be a slippery slope. How do you guys, like, if this thing were flipped tomorrow, is that a space you would have an interest in participating in?
Well, certainly if the Supreme Court, you know, basically legalizes it, it's going to be a state-by-state deal is my understanding. And I think there is going to be a following surge in advertising because that's going to be a competitive space. Mm-hmm. I can't speak to what ESPN is going to do, but I can say, you know, where our stations are and there's going to be that kind of advertising and it's legal, I think we will certainly partake in that.
Yeah, and I mean the network, you know, Van Pelt touches it on SportsCenter in his way. You've used Brent Musburger as an analyst for the tournament in the past. Right. So, I mean, it is a part of what fans are doing anyway. And when you look at some of the revenue projections, they're through the roof.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And look, it just makes kind of sports information, the things that we do, more valuable to more people.
I want to ask you about some of the local stuff because you just had a pretty big week in New York. Michael Kay won the afternoon head-to-head battle in the ratings against WFAN. What do we have to do to get LaGreca and Rosenberg in the show title?
That's funny. I just think I just think they've been very smart laying low.
Right.
Those guys, I would tell you, you know, there are days you wake up and you go, and there are days, you know, work. It's work. That's why they call it work. And there are days you wake up and you say, this is why we all do what we do. And the other day was one of those days only because I was so happy to see a group of people that have worked so hard for so long kind of get that win, right? I mean, we've always known and had confidence in that show. And it's just that is, those are great guys. Their producers are great people. That station has a great vibe. It was just so gratifying to see for them. You know, it, by the way, from a business standpoint, it's great and blah, 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 and growing for a little bit. But it's just one of those moments where you said, man, good for those guys.
So you guys have three O&Os right now, L.A., Chicago, and New York, right?
Yes.
And then you LMA, Dallas, and then
correct.
You got out of Pittsburgh in the past. How important are the local stations to your business?
Hugely important, right? They are the local touch point in the three largest markets for ESPN. I mean, that's why you see we have that kind of mix of national show and local shows. We want to be relevant locally. All three of our stations are leaders in their markets, and that's because of the local programming they provide. And also the relationship we have with the local sports teams.
So you see that Emmis got rid of some stations recently. You see iHeart and Cumulus are going through some things. Entercom just bought CBS. So the industry is going through a lot of change. Do you guys, like right now, you LMA New York from Emmis, correct?
Yes.
Do you foresee a situation where ESPN would take full ownership of that or expand and buy more stations, or are you comfortable where you are?
No, I think we're comfortable with where we are. We know we need to be in the top three markets because our model is different than anybody else's model, right? It's a combination of network and local, and it works for us. So there's no plans to really change that whatsoever.
One of those O&Os does a tremendous job on something that you and I have talked about before, and that's diversity, and that would be ESPN LA 710. That's obviously a big importance on a company level as well, not just in radio but TV. Why do you believe so much in that approach?
Beyond being the right thing to do, it's a business necessity. If you are not looking at diversity, you are, again, you're missing the big picture. It's like if you're a radio station, you can't figure out how to sell your digital stream. That's our future. I say look no further than the NBA. The NBA, the ratings are up incredibly across the board, whether it's Turner or ESPN. And that, if you look at that fan base and you look at it, that is a diverse fan base. It's young. It's the future of our country. Those are our future listeners. So, you know, if you're not on board with that, you're sleeping at the switch. And it's not easy. And look, we've done an okay job. I wouldn't give us an A by any means. I think it's spotty. But we keep striving towards that because we know that is our future.
What do you think sports radio stations should be doing to improve that?
I think looking at the podcasting space mm-hmm. for future broadcast, the reverse is going to happen.
It's a developmental
system. It is a developmental system. And by the way, you can see who's growing, who's not. I think historically it's been people doing podcasts. I mean, doing traditional radio and let's do a podcast. But now I think you can find, for the next generation, you can find some very sharp people out there doing podcasts that may make sense to bring in, put behind a mic at a radio station. And that is a diverse young audience.
I want to ask you about a couple of personnel things because obviously they're tied to the network. Bomani left radio to go into the digital space.
Yes.
Is well suited to what he does.
He is perfect. We're very excited about that podcast.
I'm sure you saw the headlines. Some said he was pushed off the radio. From your standpoint, what happened on the company side?
Not pushed off radio at all. But I will tell you, push towards podcast. Like we've made a podcasting is a big effort at our place.
Oh, no doubt. Between 30 for 30, Nolan, yep. You guys are doing a ton in that space.
No, and that is absolutely, I get these sheets that kind of, the overview of the business, local network, blah, blah, blah. Red arrow, bad. Yellow arrow, warning. Green arrow, good. I see green near everything that is podcast related. So that's my indicator that this is a business. This is where the business is going. Bomani is a perfect example of that.
I know this guy you have a great relationship with. I know he was a big part of the network in the past. I know you're on the record saying you would have loved to have kept him. Colin obviously is going to be up in a little bit. Where's your relationship with him? Is that door remain open if it ever made sense to pursue?
Hey, listen, the door is always open. I love Colin. I think Colin is extremely happy where he is. I think his family is very happy where mm-hmm. they are. I mean, Colin is one of those people that that still has a lot of friends here at ESPN. He's a great guy. He's a great talent.
DP surprised me. He actually left the door open for doing some TV stuff, which he hadn't talked about it 10 years wanting to have any kind of relationship here.
That's right. That's your old boss.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You see any future with him taking part with the network?
You just never know, right? You never know what's
going to
happen.
Were you surprised like I was that Dan would even entertain that?
No, I don't think so. No, I think Dan's a smart guy. Dan
you do remember he wore the visitor pass on Scott Van Pelt Sports Center, right?
Yes,
to make sure it was known.
I do. That speaks to Dan's sense of humor more than anything else, which I do miss. But look, Dan's another guy. Look, he's a talented guy. We're a big place. You never know what's going to happen.
Where were you when the news came that John was leaving, Skipper?
I'm not sure. I don't quite remember.
I mean, you had to obviously be stunned like everyone.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Listen, John, I knew John personally. I've known John a long time. He's a friend. And I think did some incredibly good stuff at ESPN. I mean, you wouldn't see any of the 30 for 30s without John. He's a great creative mind. And I'll tell you, we talked about diversity earlier. John was a true champion of diversity. And because of that, made our place better.
Mm-hmm.
And look, he's dealing with what he's dealing, and he's got a lot of well-wishers.
So brand new president.
Jimmy Pitaro, big sports fan.
First impression so far.
Huge radio listener.
So what's his show?
First time, long time. I don't know. I'm going to have to ask what he wants. But you could tell he definitely grew up in the New York area with Mike and the Mad Dog.
Right.
And we were in a meeting with him the other day, and he was asking me about Freddie and Fitz because he loves listening to them every night.
Freddie right now is, probably thanking God that he just got mentioned by the president.
So anyway, it's exciting to have him on board. And again, he is a real sports fan. He comes in with a ton of experience on the Disney side. And, I think for the way the world is headed from a digital and technology standpoint, he's going to be the right guy at the right time.
I'm going to wrap up with something I do call quick hits in just a moment. But I want to ask you about one last thing, because one thing that drives me nuts following the business is how quickly people pounce on a new show. Especially, I don't mind if fans attack a new show. That's what fans do. But when media people attack media people, it drives me nuts, because I'm like, wait, would you want your contract ripped up after 3 days on a new job? That's ridiculous. You see it with Golic and Wingo starting a show. Will Kane takes over an afternoon. Greeny's going through it right now with Get Up. Why are we in such a time in this world, with probably because of social media, but why do you think there's so much negativity in the sports media space, when we should all be pulling for each other to do well and increase jobs?
For the life of me, I can't figure that out. Other than I think it's just a part of kind of what you see overall. It's a crazy time, right? People kind of go to the negative, no matter from what side, and there's a rush to judgment. Is it because of social media? Is social media a tool that extends that or amplifies it? I'm not smart enough to know any of that, other than to say, these days, when you're leading a group and you're dealing with content, you've got to have the fortitude to kind of withstand the initial onslaught and realize that stuff needs to take time. I have never seen anything work that didn't take time. From Rush Limbaugh to Sean Hannity to Tom Joyner to Mike and Mike.
Right.
You put it on, you let it bake, you let the audience get familiar with it, and if it's good content, it will come. But you got to have patience.
From your position, do you have a frame of mind of how long you're going to give a show to prove whether or not it's connected with you? Is it 6, 12, 18 months?
I think it's certainly longer than 6 months. And I believe in radio. And this is, by the way, people can argue with me on this, but I have just seen it, especially on a network scale. It's over a year. I first came to ESPN from ABC. I remember that folks wanted to kind of kill off Greeny and Golic after 2 years, right? And then we're going, wait a minute, there's chemistry there. There's something there. You've got to give it time. I mean, it took Rush a long time.
I was here when Cowherd started, and right. People were going, listen to this guy's name, and he's not Tony Kornheiser, and he's a West Coast show on an East Coast network. It took time, and then why is he here? Because it brings balance.
You got to have patience, and we're fortunate enough to work for a company that gives us that. And allows us to kind of put out the good content we strive to do.
All right, I'm going to hit you with a couple quick hits. Just the first thought that jumps to mind to each of these questions. One word to define the state of the radio industry right now would be what?
You have to define that. You can say audio industry or radio industry?
Audio.
Thriving.
All right, now let's do the flip, radio.
Radio, it's got some work to do.
Biggest misconception of ESPN would be what?
That we have some agenda. There's no agenda here.
One noticeable change fans will recognize with ESPN audio over the next few years would be what?
More and better podcasts, a diverse lineup, and maybe some more play-by-play.
And then the final one that I've got for you personally, the one move you wish you had back.
I wish I had my reverse layup back. I trip now trying to do that.
Come on, you have to
That's my one move.
You have to have one professional move in your career that you go, damn it, I blew that. Because we all do.
Oh, wow. I have to tell you, I loved my time running the ABC radio networks. I absolutely loved it. And I was lucky enough to come over to a company that was kind of on the rise and had embraced radio. It was all part of the same company, ESPN. I don't have any regrets. I feel incredibly fortunate to be where I am, doing what I'm doing. The one move, and I tell this to my son who's 24, 25, I go, you got There are two times in life when you can go entrepreneurial. Early 20s or much later on.
Yep.
So
I'm kind of in between.
Right.
Pulling
well,
it
you're
off.
In between. You're
definitely not.
Oh, wait,
the,
you're the outlier.
I'm the exception, not the rule.
You're the outlier. So maybe entrepreneurial right off the bat would have been interesting, and in the radio business.
Right.
But other than that, I've been very fortunate.
I appreciate the time today. It's good seeing you.
Good seeing you, Jason. Thanks. Thanks for making the time.
This is the Barrett Sports Media Podcast.
It's always good to connect with Trog Keller. If you're wondering why the Mike Francesa return to WFAN question didn't come up, it's because we conducted that conversation prior to the Francesa story breaking. With regards to the conversation you just heard between myself and Trog, here were a few of the tidbits that stood out. First, the commitment and belief in podcasting is strong for ESPN Audio. They see it as a huge growth space and one that they want to be more active in. Secondly, sports betting, and I thought this was a really interesting part of the conversation, will be an area that ESPN will explore if it becomes legalized. Now, given the Disney Association, some of you guys may find that interesting. I also thought Trog was candid when I asked him about purchasing more radio stations. It is a buyer's market right now, but he says the company is content with the three that they have. With regards to Colin Cowherd and Dan Patrick coming back, the door remains open. Whether those discussions, though, will evolve and produce future changes at the network is way too early to tell. And finally, if you were wondering how long of a leash a new show should be given, Trog told you. A minimum of a year is necessary, and in some cases, it takes even longer. If you heard his example of Mike and Mike, there were some in the company who wanted to squash the show after 2 years. They stuck by the guys, and what do you know, 16 years later, they had a heck of a run. Overall, I thought there were a number of things in there to think about and digest, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. And on that note, that's going to wrap up the first episode of Season 3. My thanks again to Trog Keller and ESPN Radio for the hospitality in Bristol. A reminder, please subscribe or leave a review for the podcast on iTunes. It's greatly appreciated, as well as sharing the content on social media. If you work with a sports media brand or people who have a connection to the industry, I work as a consultant, strategist, and trainer. To find out how I can help you or your group, visit sportsradiopd.com. My contact information is available on the website. With apologies to Kid Rock, I'm going to close out each episode this season with a different quote of my own. So I'll leave you with this one today. The most critical component to your business is your audience. If you don't have an audience, you don't have a business. Until next time, I'm Jason Barrett. Thanks for stopping by.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, sportsradiopd.com.